You're listening to the Devil's Advocates. Then at 6, stay tuned for the Meggie Dawn Show on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX. The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Dom, it's a happy hour, the Friday edition, rolling into it. And we got a fine guest. He's joined us live via stream. He is James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of the Morning Cannolis, right on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 on the Saturday mornings, and then replaying on Sundays. Jim, welcome back, man. How you doing?
Hey, Jim.
It is good. Always good to be with you, gentlemen. A big news day once again. Fridays.
That's why we work most Fridays. At least I do. Dom's always touch and go.
We'll see. It's a good Friday.
Jim, it is January 6th Eve. And for those scoring at home, the topic will be the January 6th, at least for a minute. 3 years later, Jim, there's been some accountability for the riotous mob that was encouraged to be there by the former president. But there's been very little accountability, to my opinion, sir, 3 years later, for a guy like Donald Trump, who's rallying in Newton, Iowa tomorrow, walking a free man despite the charges. What's your reaction, counselor?
I agree with you. The statistics on this are about 1,200 people have been charged, most of them, great majority of them, on campus, on the congressional grounds, legislative grounds there on January 6th. About 900 of them have been convicted already. We've got 714 pleas or so. Again, those include Proud Boys and Oath Keepers, those kinds of folks who are at the lower levels, mid-levels, and engage in a lot of violent activity. And that's the record of the Department of Justice, again, through the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C. To your point, the question is, when do the folks who are really responsible for prompting all of those folks to come to the Capitol grounds on January 6th, go to the Ellipse, walk down Pennsylvania Avenue, go to Congress that day and attack our democracy, attack the Congress, try to stop the counting of votes? And we know that Jack Smith has done something in that direction. That is, he is, through the grand jury process, he has indicted Donald Trump four counts. Those include two obstruction counts, which are significant. And Judge Chutkan, the D.C. District Court, has tentatively scheduled that, again, to begin in March, but also put that on hold while we wrestle with issues related to things like immunity and other issues related to that. So to your point today, 3 years out, we do not have accountability for Donald Trump. And I would add the other unindicted co-conspirators in that indictment were also there. Many others, including fake electors around the country, also charged in some of our states. None of them, well, the exception of one in Michigan who's pled guilty, none of them yet responsible in the courts of law.
Jim, you lead me wonderfully to my next question. Perhaps you saw the reporting just before the first of the year. New tapes from CNN, apparently Kenneth Cheesebro with Michigan investigators. And my suspicion is Cheesebro also recorded these interviews and he released them to the media, because there are so many different times where CNN is effectively quoting the only one that would know the commonality between so many of these incidents, and that is Kenneth Cheesebro. And Jim, when I read the article, and we laid it out for the people right here on the airwaves, but when I read the article and played the sound of Chesbro's testimony to Michigan prosecutors, this was a procedural coup. It was meant to overturn the the actual outcome of the election. They knew it wasn't the actual outcome. They were trying to find a justification to overturn the will of the voters. And this was directed at the highest levels by the Trump campaign. And Jim, we know this just from the public record, from the reporting that we've seen. We have no idea how much other evidence and communications and text messages there might be. But Jim, it all seems very damning. Why are we still waiting? We don't even have charges against anyone here in the state of Wisconsin.
Absolutely. And to your point embedded in there, we don't know what other things Jack Smith has and the AG in Michigan has, and of course, Fannie Willis has, and Nevada has, those kinds of folks who are going forward with these charges. Lots of things presumably in their quiver to shoot, if you will, during the course of a trial coming up here. But the issue related to Chesbrough is compelling. He plainly was the guy not just in the room. He was the one who, you recall, wrote the original memorandum called the Wisconsin Memorandum, later on became the larger memorandum that contemplated this entire cross-country attempt to overthrow the results against seven different states. He's a key person. And so the things that he is saying are very, very helpful for the prosecution. More importantly, for all of us, they provide this clear sense that this was not people simply exercising the possibility of the electors by the vice president, by the Speaker of the House being found inadequate. These are people who intended purposely to make false statements, to articulate that they were people who they were not, and for the purpose, again, of undermining the electoral process. And so his testimony is that glue, that cement that brings it all together. He was the director, and he also knows about Donald Trump. And like all these other folks, including Sidney Powell, perhaps cooperating out there as well, maybe in Georgia, other places, those are the people who can also bring in the connection between fake electors, himself, and Donald Trump, and these other people we've talked about.
And in regards to Wisconsin, Chesbrough was in the room at the state capitol a block away from me. He was in the room with the fake Trump electors, although Andrew Hitt claimed he didn't know who he was. He took video while in the room, while they were signing these fraudulent affidavits. And not only that, when these fake electors did not arrive in D.C. as anticipated, and the panic was going on, and they were considering chartered flights, and someone had to chaperone these fake electors to the vice president. Well, Chesbrough was also the recipient of the fake electors from the Wisconsin, from the Michigan contingent. He delivered them at Scott Perry's office. And then, new news, we find out they were delivered to Ron Johnson. And whether it took a second or a minute, he was willing to do a hell of a lot more than simply just be a conduit of these documents. Jim, I've said a lot. Unpack.
Sure. Absolute commentary on at least two of those points. One is that, again, he is standing there in the room. And so when we think about investigating and prosecuting, one of the other reasons that you will prosecute, obviously, is because people engage in criminal conduct. That's the core issue. One of the things that happens, of course, is when you prosecute them, Fannie Willis is beginning to see this, Michigan's beginning to see this, they come forward and they tell you what the conversations were, not just in the room, but also in the hallway, maybe on the phone the night before. Hey, we're coming to this room. Here's what you're going to do. Here's our point. Here's our purpose. All those things that are not recorded, but nonetheless are the appropriate subjects of investigative focus. That's what you get also by going after the electors here in the state of Wisconsin, other places. They may not go to jail for prison for long periods of time, but they provide the other information that, again, describes the overall conspiracy. And yes, that's what it is. Fannie Willis describes it as a RICO conspiracy. They also provide this additional part of this. As to Ron Johnson, we have said this before. I have very little doubt that when it comes to the kinds of things that the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., that is, you identify people who are witnesses, we know who those are, then there are subjects and there are targets. And all kinds of names fall in those different categories. Subjects are people who you look at and you say, gee, they were involved in this. We don't know if they have criminal culpability, but we'll see how the evidence plays out. Targets are people like Donald Trump and the other co-conspirators, unindicted co-conspirators, who we know have committed crimes and we just need to establish it. I have very little doubt that Ron Johnson's name, among many other members of Congress probably, are on the list of at least subjects by the Department of Justice. May in fact be more than that, depending upon, again, your involvement in this. Basic conspiracy law, you're in for a dime, you're in for whatever the expression is, you're in for a dollar, you can participate in a small portion of the conspiracy and still be held responsible for the entire enterprise, the undertaking, without knowing all the different aspects of it. Probably Ron Johnson and these others knew a whole lot more than we are even getting in the public domain.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Morning Cannoli Saturdays here on the Civic Media Network. Jim, happy Friday, man. The news does drop on Fridays. It's great to be with you. Jamel Bowie, opinion columnist in the New York Times, had a great piece we posted up on the Devil's Advocates Facebook page. If Trump is not an insurrectionist, what is he? And breaking news today, Jim, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments on whether or not Donald Trump could be on the ballot in these myriad of states February 8th, next month, coming up real quick. And to Bowie's point, if Trump is not an insurrectionist, what is he? I mean, he called them to Washington. Remember, we'll be wild, right? He fired them up with incendiary speech. Got to fight like hell. You're not going to have a country anymore. He sent them to the Capitol. I'm going to go walk with you, Jim. I'm going to walk with you. They attacked the Capitol. He did nothing. And then when he finally did something, did nothing for 3 hours. That is an act. Doing nothing to me, that's an act, right? That you make a purposeful point to not do anything. And then finally, he said, go home, and they went home. He conducted this whole thing. In my mind, Jim, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to take it up. How do you think this plays out? What are your thoughts on the process and on the facts?
Right. Not surprising the Supreme Court takes this on. We will all be watching on February 8th. We can listen to the oral argument live, and we get a sense about who's going where with this. Again, I would recommend to your good point, Dom, anybody who doubts that this was an insurrection, read the Colorado opinion from the Supreme Court. It's long, it's lengthy, but here's an assignment again for the coming weekend. Read that. And when you come away from that, this is a court that's looking at the trial evidence was presented by the lower court judge in Colorado, assessing all that and finding, yeah, this was insurrection. Oh, by the way, the 14th Amendment also applies here. It is a compelling piece of jurisprudence here to be taken up. Supreme Court has many different avenues here. We've talked about this before, probably not going to embrace the big issues, could go off in some procedural things, could also find that only a legislature maybe should be the one deciding that. My own prediction is they will probably put him back on the ballot, but he's going to lose, I think, on two other Supreme Court cases, including the immunity thing, ultimately, and another case having to do with whether or not the charges in the January 6th case apply to him as well. All those pending for the Supreme Court.
It's too much losing! James Santel, our fine guest. Stick around. He's sticking around. He is a former U.S. attorney. He's the host of his own fine show, The Morning Cannoli. Find him tomorrow morning, 9 to 11. Find more of us in about a minute and 10 seconds.
My lack of involvement was seconds worth of texting.
Think you know politics? Think again. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, our friend, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannoli here on the Civic Media Network on Saturdays, replayed on Sundays. Jim, thank you for sticking around. I want to get a touch back on one of your points before we went to break. The myriad of cases that the Supreme Court will take up regarding the former president, the immunity, this ultimate, grand, unlimited immunity, seems like a farce on its face. When does that happen? Have there been dates on that? And how will that impact, the trial dates as they're scheduled right now, in your opinion?
Right. Exactly. Again, the easy substantive thing to say is this, although it's very strong to say it, Supreme Court has got to find that no president is completely immune. They've got to do that. If they don't find that, at least they should do that unanimously. But if the majority of them don't do that, then we are talking about the Republic beginning to crumble, right? That's got to make that decision. They've got to hand him a loss on that. So the question is, what's going on here? The Supreme Court decided not to accept Jack Smith's invitation to take this up. It's back before the Court of Appeals. And so I need to be back on your show again next week. There's my self-invitation, because my understanding is that as early as next week, Monday or so, the Court of Appeals, the D.C. Court of Appeals, is going to be entertaining that argument. Presumably, they will issue an opinion. It's going to be a 3-judge panel. Again, they've also got to say, there's no immunity. Then, of course, Donald Trump will take it back to the Supreme Court, and they should very quickly resolve that one to hand him a loss, a clear, unequivocal loss on that. He's not immune. The opposite direction is unthinkable. Again, the other issue, which we chatted about right before the break, again, is the other issues here before the Supreme Court. Those could go in some different directions, including Colorado. My sense is they'll hand him one win, one loss. And then also there's this third case. It's actually called Fisher, and it has to do with whether or not about 100 defendants charged on the Capitol grounds that day, whether the charges against them can stand under something called 18 U.S.C. 1512. Supreme Court could make a decision about that. The reason why that's significant to Donald Trump, Trump is also charged with on two counts under the same statute. No oral argument scheduled on that one yet, but that could also dramatically affect what happens in the federal case involving Donald Trump in D.C. Lots going on.
Counselor, this one I'm going to throw to you because I know you get into the granular detail, but my understanding is there is no textual reason why the U.S. Supreme Court should take up the immunity case unless there is a conviction. So if Trump gets convicted, he can certainly appeal his pleadings of presidential immunity. But my understanding through the breeding of smart people is there's no reason for them to get involved because it's not written that way. That's not the way the statute would read. There are other cases where they talk about, well, you've got to wait. It's written into the text. It's not written here, is my understanding, Counselor. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And again, under normal circumstances, if the three of us were indicted, that sort of thing, well, we may not allege immunities, but we would get the entire case resolved by the district court, then goes up to the circuit court on all kinds of things, including whether or not there are immunities out there, jury selection, evidentiary presentations, all kinds of things. And then if the Supreme Court decides to take the case on, it would do that. Hopeful here that in a case where, again, Donald Trump getting some very special consideration here by the federal courts, the D.C. court hearing this case, the best thing the Supreme Court could do to move this along, we talked about it the last time I was on your show, the D.C. Court of Appeals affirms the lower decision from Judge Chutkan finding no immunity applies. Donald Trump appeals to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court in a one-sentence order says we're not taking the case, and the law of the case is the D.C. opinion, goes back to Judge Chutkan, and she can get this back on her calendar. Maybe not in time for March 4th, although, again, outside possibility, depending upon how closely all of this falls into line. That's the scenario that gets this done more quickly. Supreme Court should not take a look at this. It should not grant cert. This is not a close question.
So the answer to my question that you already asked is that I was going to ask is March 4th date. We're talking just over 8 weeks away, given those scenarios. Okay, if not March 4th, how much longer do you think it would take to get some solution on that particular question?
Right. It is a great question because, again, TikTok, it's going to be the theme of 2024 timing, right? And so you've got a district court judge. She plainly has other things on her docket, including criminal cases, civil cases that are out there. And she's plainly carved out a huge amount of time. We already know she got some jury selection things underway already. She's got weeks set aside for jury selection itself. Presumably months of trial activity here as well. She's got to find a big chunk of time. And so that's her challenge. Not to say she cannot do that, say, for example, in an April, a May, or June, or July when we're doing conventions here in Milwaukee and Chicago. Imagine that, right? But again, she'd have to carve out that period of time. She could probably go to the chief judge there and say, listen, I've got to get some consideration here. Maybe because of the government, the overall national interest in getting this resolved, have some of these cases assigned to other folks also on the DC court, district court, and let me take this one, let me resolve this and get this underway. It is not impossible to think that trial will be, it won't be conducted. Very possible it will be conducted before the election itself. The appeals, on the other hand, will not be resolved by November. Difficult to imagine.
My understanding, Donald Trump and his attorney is very critical filing briefs that, you know, apparently Jack Smith should be paying him for continuing to move some of these things forward while this is supposed to be on a stay. I didn't get into the details of it, but there's a stay on this, and Jack Smith is still providing some, you know, legal maneuvers. What's your sense on how that's supposed to work?
Does the word ridiculous come to mind? Again, another of these completely unfounded motions intended to make us all, not all of us, but some of us think, ooh, there's a real there isn't. The district court judges said, you know, I'm going to suspend, she said, the trial date. That's not to say that the prosecution doesn't have to can't do other things to make these happen, anticipating that. That's what he's doing. This is a motion that's, again, frivolous, it's meritless, should go nowhere, and it will go nowhere.
Jim, the New York case, Letitia James, my understanding, the filed closing arguments, they don't actually offer them as oral arguments. They filed them, and as part of her closing arguments, an ask of $370 million. Ooh. Some would perceive that to be a lot of money. Now, Donald Trump has already come out and said, Letitia James should be paying me money. There's a theme here, Jim.
Right, there is. At least we're consistent in our pleadings, are we not, right? And so, once again, this is significant. Obviously, initially asked for $250 million. That was the number we've been banding about for a couple of years here. What happened is we had a trial, and that's what's in front of Judge Engoron. And now we've had all these economic people come in. And now, based upon, as you said, the results of that oral argument, closing, we've decided it's more than that. And that's what this is about. Plainly, there'll be a disposition by Judge Engoron, presumably sometime this month, maybe early next month. We'll find out how much money he then awards.
Last 60 seconds, real quick on my end. Jim, does Donald Trump, does he have to be in the courtroom during this criminal trial?
During a criminal trial, the answer would be yes. A civil trial, no. Interesting, I hear he's going to be in the D.C. Court of Appeals for the argument next week, which is interesting. Not at the council, presumably, but he's going to be there in some way. So he's going to be in court a lot in 2024 and beyond.
Counselor, Milwaukee County D.A. John Chisholm not seeking re-election. Got a quick response or reaction? Are you running, sir?
Right. Good guy, worked in the lot for many, many years, and a wonderful public servant. Best wishes to him in his next challenges out there.
Well done. Quite efficient. James Santel, tune in tomorrow morning, 9 to 11. He doesn't have to be efficient. It'll be the morning cannolis. Get your fill. Thank you, Jim. We appreciate you coming around.
Thanks, Jeff.
Good afternoon.
The big and tall of political talk. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition, a happier, happy hour. Well, it's January 6th Eve up in here, and we want to thank our most recent guest, a fine one, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. And if you love you some Jim Santel, and who doesn't, tune in for the morning cannolis, 9 to 11 a.m. If you're not local, check your Civic Media app, civicmedia.us. And since I've been banned from the Trump rally tomorrow, Dem, on January 6th, I'm going to watch a little college basketball. My Badgers are going to beat the Nebraska Cornhuskers, I greatly suspect. And then Sunday afternoon, it's the Bears and the Packers. And I miss the Aaron Rodgers days in this regard. He always owned the Packers. The Bears, right? Right?
Own you. Own the Bears.
That's what they put on the Wikipedia, at least for a few days. But what happened to our guy, Dom? What happened to former Packer, future Hall of Famer, perhaps, Aaron Rodgers? He was a good guy. I liked him. I cheered for him.
I
got
man.
A jersey with his number on it, or at least the kids do. Dom, Washington Post, earlier this week, we air the grievances. I'm going to throw one of mine out there.
All right.
Aaron Rodgers was a provocateur with a purpose. Now he's just a troll.
Oh, no.
This is a perspective at the Washington Post offered by Candace Buckner. Here's what she writes. In Aaron Rodgers, you really, really picked the wrong ally. Don't worry, because you all did. Every one of you in your own collective rush to have a mainstream sports star validate your beliefs, sympathize with your convictions, and echo your true thoughts. You found a willing and likable spokesman in Rodgers. All you had to do was massage his rapturous ego by listening to one of his long-winded podcast interviews or reading one of his cover stories, and somewhere in all that cascading twaddle, you discovered an opinion that aligned with yours. Black people, you once thought you'd found your rare white quarterback honest enough to express the obvious in how NFL owners had blackballed Colin Kaepernick. Nerds at heart and fun-loving weirdos, guys like Dom, you tripped over yourselves in unearthing similarities with the most popular athlete in America, most popular game, a real-life jock invited to sit at your lunch table, who also had a passion for Wes Anderson films, Halo 3, Game of Thrones, and the Spiral Dynamics Theory. I don't know what that is, Dom. That must be for you. But libertarians, you used to be one of those. You believed you had a peer who happened to star in an egalitarian game for a living, but also thumbed through Atlas Shrugged and raged against governmental overreach, especially as related to personal freedoms. Religious nuns, also Dom, in a league saturated with Christian evangelical overtones, you related with football's secular maverick, whose life motto is to question everything.
Crudy and everybody else everywhere, you thought you could get behind this A-list celebrity who had a beating heart for children living with cancer and for kids who had lost a loved one in combat. A rich and famous guy, but a well-meaning human being, just like the rest of us. Over the past several years, Rogers has offered himself as a champion of both counterculture ideals and conventional wisdom, appearing as if he had that special ability to be a friend to marginalized groups that could use the established name as a more of an accepted voice over their megaphones. But be careful of the allies you choose, because a man sequestered on an island where only his own opinion matters can never stand as anyone's advocate.
That's why these days, stand for you. We're your advocates.
For the devil's advocates. 844-967-2789. These days, when Rogers wakes up in the morning with that weaselly smirk on his face, he seems intent on fanning more chaos into the world. His message no longer connects with the general population, or at least the demographic of a sports fan who will tune in to the Pat McAfee show for some low-consequence entertainment. Hey, low-consequence entertainment, it sounds like us. Instead, Rogers has chosen the side that would rather criminalize the nation's leading infectious disease expert and casually accuse a late-night talk show host of being linked to a sex trafficking. During his weekly paid appearance with McAfee on Tuesday, a show sidekick teed up Rogers to say something inflammatory regarding a list of associates tied to Jeffrey Epstein, and Rogers obliged. There's a lot of people, including Jimmy Kimmel, really hoping that that doesn't come out, Rogers said, dropping Kimmel's name from out of nowhere. It's a sad commentary on our world that anyone can say anything about a person, just throwing unsubstantiated nonsense against the wall, and someone somewhere will actually believe it. Yet it's even more jarring when the loose-lipped accuser used to speak with the recognition that his platform came with a certain responsibility. 2016, Rogers made an appearance on comedian Pete Holmes' podcast, You Made It Weird. And in that nearly two-hour conversation, the topics range from the existence of UFOs to gluten-free soap, whether God also loves the team that loses, Rogers' favorite shooter video game, and much, much more. Though he had won a Super Bowl, even as he lifted the Lombardi Trophy, he said he questioned whether that was all there was to life. In the years that followed, he would turn inward, seeking a larger meaning. Although other men might allow a Super Bowl triumph to define him, not Rogers. Honestly, I think the root of it is this. You get to a point where I think you just desire to be looked at as more than just what you're known for, trying to change the narrative a little bit. When they think about you, what's the first thing they think about? Rogers asked Holmes and wanted to say, I just believe that there's more going on in what we see, and there's more going on in what we're told, and there's more going on in what we should know. And that hope for me spurs me to use my influence in better ways, to connect with more people, to love better, to judge less. So that works for me, quote unquote. Contrast those words to his Tuesday appearance with McAfee. You've got to take back your country from those effing monsters, Rogers said. Aaron Rodgers, let me repeat that. I didn't hear this part of it. You've got to take back our country from those effing monsters. He has become a crusader for his own fringe beliefs, such a far cry from someone who at least had been a provocateur with a purpose. So his support for Kaepernick in 2017 could have been more substantive, at least he was a white man who actually got it, understanding how critics focused solely on the method of black NFL players' protests taking a knee, but overlooked the reasons behind them. Rogers was the representative from the other side who stepped up and said something. He was an ally. Now it's hard to imagine Rogers as anything but a man unmoored in his own mission. Rogers finds it appealing to make people uncomfortable, which explains why he'll show up on to McAfee's show, a format that intends to mimic the bro vibes of a locker room, and announce with glee, "Fauci's a criminal." It's stunning to watch Rogers spiral into polarization, especially when McAfee, just by being relatable, has created a brand in retirement that dwarfs his NFL career. And when the Mannings, Peyton and Eli can dominate media without fatiguing the public. Instead of building a bridge that would connect his playing career to a lucrative life in the mainstream after retiring, Rogers would rather wall himself behind conspiracy theories and retreat into the darkness of his own warped beliefs. He no longer sides with the masses who thought they had found a likable companion inside the mighty NFL. He no longer represents you, us, and maybe he never did. I think that's probably the answer, Crudy. Candace Buckner, a perspective at the Washington Post. A lot of people really got fired up about this article, Crudy.
That guy got 51 touchdown passes one year. That's what I loved about Aaron Rodgers. That guy could throw that pigskin. Man, he could zip it in there. And he had the amazing ability to, you know, draw people off sides and all the things that I admire about a great football player.
He's good at his sport. Okay, he's good at his job.
But be careful about your role models, right, Tom? You and I are not role models. You know, it is a little bit sad because I did like him, you know, as a persona. I liked Aaron Rodgers. Hell, you know, saw him on the State Farm commercials, him and Jake. And, you know, he had a lot of fun. Every week of his career, they picked captains every week. And somehow Aaron Rodgers would sneak into the team captain's photo. Every game of his entire career, he appears in the team's captain's photo, whether or not he had been named team captain. I mean, it's a good-natured guy, right?
Is it, or is that really just kind of a D-bag move that kind of shows you exactly who he is? You know what I mean? I guess it depends on how you perceive that kind of behavior to be. Fun and entertaining.
Well, I never perceived it to be a D-bag move, but apparently you do. You know a little something about that, don't you, Dom?
Yeah, come on, man.
So why did he become a troll?
Or is this become, he's just becoming more of who he is?
I think he's transformed. I think after he broke up with Danica Patrick, it was all downhill.
His heart was broken, man, and now it's never good again.
I mean, I thought he won like a Super Bowl while he was dating Olivia Munn, and then he had the Danica Patrick days, but then he moved on to the Shailene Woodley, and man, he just went off and took that ayahuasca.
Are you saying
ayahuasca?
He shut up and dribbled, Rudy? What are you telling me here, man?
I am telling you, he did a little too much ayahuasca that day on the island. I think he's still searching for his soul. I think he wore a little thin, Dom. But I used to like the guy. I mean, so what? He's an NFL, maybe future NFL player. We'll see if he recovers from the Achilles heel. But what he will not recover from is himself. He's basically blackballed himself from polite society. He could have been a rich, rich, wealthy man for the rest of his life. And I'm not saying he's going to be broke.
He probably will be.
Yeah, but Michael Jordan made a hell of a lot more money endorsing sneakers than he ever did bouncing a basketball. You know what I mean? Aaron Rodgers might have had a sweet $20 million a year career. But that ends. That's going to end soon. I mean, he's never going to be the same player. Maybe he'll play to 40. But that sweet, sweet endorsement money, that could have rolled in for another 20, 30 years. Hell, to his grave, for all we know.
Ah, come on, Alex.
And he's
Jones,
not going to get any more.
Hello, guy. He's got plenty of time. Look how much money all the Trump hustlers are making from the Trump followers, man. I mean, we've been how many Donald
Watch,
Trump
rallies next, you'll be.
And he's seen all the vendors, man. All the vendors.
He'll be going down the Brett Favre route. He'll be
support Donald Trump. They're there selling the Trump swag because those megas will buy it. So there's plenty of work. But here's what I didn't know: we've got to take back our country from these effing monsters. What does that mean?
I mean, talking about Fauci and those that would be pro-vaccine. That's all tied to his anti-Fauci.
Right. This is the immunized guy. I mean, when he said he was immunized and never, then what, got COVID and gave COVID? I'm not clear what the storyline was on that, but he said he was immunized. He didn't say he was vaccinated because he, what, took some vitamin C and cocaine and now he's immunized? I don't know what that means. But if nothing else, that was already back then was already an indicator of wow, man, really, dude. So I bet if you go back and look and a little sharper glasses, this was probably there the whole time. 844-967-2789. Let's get to it. Jack from the Mac, you're up. Happy Friday, Jack. What do you got for us today?
Hey, Jack.
First, a quick comment on Aaron Rodgers, but I have something a little more serious. But I think he just took one too many hits during his tenure on the Packers as their main quarterback.
Do you think he's going to follow Brett Favre into like being a shyster representative for like the Mississippi Welfare Agency and give no-show speeches? I mean, he doesn't have much of a future, does he? Copper tone arm wraps? I don't know what him and Brett are going to be endorsing in the future.
Yeah, good luck with that. Anyway, grievance day, right?
Yes, lay it on us.
Here's my grievance. This is the problem. Too many Americans by far have been convinced of one of the following things about January 6th, and I've been thinking about this for a long time, so it's going to maybe take a while. First of all, they've been convinced that maybe this was a normal tourist visit, which a few got out of hand. Of course, it wasn't. About 1,000 have already been convicted. There might have been an incident, but it wasn't serious. Yeah, it was kind of serious. Hang my tents. Gallows already constructed. Pretty obviously planned, like the electoral fraud. Those who participated in the violence, they were patriots. The election result was fraudulent. What? Lost over 600 evidence-free court cases claiming that, and recounts and audits and fraudits and certification by all 50 states, over half were in Republican hands. And these lies have been perpetuated by Fox News and similar outlets, and they've been repeatedly claimed by the Republican leadership.
Jack, thank you. I know that list is long. Stick around. One more segment of the Devil's Advocates, 844-967-2789. Trouble with
you is the trouble. You, Aaron Rodgers.
You done messed up, Aaron!
The Devil's Advocates. Making radio great again.
Welcome back to the Devil's Radio Show, our last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up on the lines right now, 844-967-2789. Stick around, the Maggie Dawn Show comes up next.
Dominic, on the text line, someone texted in from the 920. Packer fans fall hard for their white guys, Favre, Rodgers, Kuhn, Jordy, Chimura, etc. And I kind of feel like Nikki Haley, because right now I've got to defend myself. I named my boat the Jordan Love Boat. I got a favorite Packer quarterback who's a black guy.
Oh, come on. Reggie White? Man, he was
awesome. Reggie White's my favorite Packer of all time. He was the greatest football player, perhaps.
On and off the field, good human being.
Did you see Nikki Haley defended herself? I don't know if you knew, but CNN did a couple of GOP town halls last night with Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley. They're apparently the only two viable alternatives to Trump at this point. And Nikki's had a little trouble with her allusions to the Civil War without acknowledging the slavery component, how that might have been
issues of governmental overreach.
Well, last night in defending herself, she effectively said, well, you know, I grew up in South Carolina. Of course, we know about the Civil War and slavery. Hell, I have black friends. And let's just say a few people said, oh, no, she went there.
Yes, she went there
because you may not be aware, but through history, a few racists have used the I've got a black friend, though, as some sort of a defense. And what Nikki Haley was doing, perhaps, on the CNN was giving those, let's just say, overt racists a little bit of cover fire, you know, because we've all got a black friend. We've all got a favorite NFL player, right? So appreciate the texter helping me transition to that thought. 844-967-2789. Call, text, doesn't matter to us. It's Friday. Air your Grievance is here. Except I don't have the phones up, so you're going to have to help me out, Don.
I got you. Mark, you're patient. Thank you. Happy Friday. What do you got for us today?
Hey, Mark.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. For God's sake, Strom Thurmond had a black daughter, so you know he had some kind of
Did Thomas Jefferson.
It's just ridiculous that Nikki Haley's coming up with this, because the fact of the matter is that to a great many of the people down there in the South, she would not be considered white. I mean, that's the way it is. That's just the way it is. It's sad that she just doesn't have the sense to actually do that, or doesn't have the courage to actually do it and call out that the Civil War is about slavery.
Yeah, Mark, I don't know who she's trying to appease with that. You know, what was that political calculation in her head? What was the Civil War about? Slavery. I mean, that's it. That's the first thing that comes to mind. The very first thing that comes to mind, in my mind. And if I were running for, you know, some sort of political office, what would be the motivation for me to not say the first logical, accurate thing that would come to anyone's mind who was ever taught anything about anything in this country? Politics? Was she? She didn't want to offend the mega base? I'm not clear what she was thinking, but let's move on. 844-967-2789. Go ahead, Chris.
Andrew from Verona on the text line, WMDX text in. I started the show by saying there are two lines that I don't like to cross in this world. They're non-negotiable. And line number one is your participation in the January 6th insurrection. I cannot be your friend. Right, Ryan Johnson? We're not friends any longer. And the second line, I would not cross Nickelback. But both you and Nate apparently have an affinity for the Nickelback. And the texter Andrew says, I was going to say the second red line would be traveling to Epstein's Island. But you're right. Nickelback is worse. No. Texters also pointed out that Wayne LaPierre left at the NRA today, stepping down.
Oh, no.
A conduit for Russian money to Republican candidates. And, of course, you know, to give front to the manufacturers of arms and to sue against any sort of thoughtful or reasonable regulation or, let's just say, background checks. No, none of that. Bye, Felicia. I hope he has a nice retirement. Spends more time with family.
Oh, now that he's run the NRA into the ground, I mean, time to go. 844-967-2789. Wisco, Paul, you're up. Happy Friday, Paul. What do you got?
Hey, Paulie.
Hey, happy Friday to you, Devils. First of all, I got to say, well said, Jack from Merrimack. That was pretty cool. A little thought went into that. As far as the Packers go, I'm an older gentleman here. Well, not too old, but old enough.
Not a gentleman, certainly, but please continue.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Grudy. But Bart Starr is my all-time favorite. But that being said, Reggie White, he helped turn the Packers around, and you can't help but love him. J6, I think everything's been said about that today. It happened, and it's real, and you want to believe a news network that told you right to your face that they lied about everything, and you still want to believe them, I don't think it can help them. And my grievance, I got a quick grievance, though, and that's the border. The GOP points out all the problems down at the border, but they don't want to do anything about it because, in my mind, it's the only thing they got to run on. Point out a problem, don't do anything about it, and that's what they're good at doing. So with that, thanks for taking my call. I love you guys, and have a great weekend.
Well, thank you, Wisco.
I appreciate it, man.
I hope he's got some cold spotted cows waiting for him.
Oh, yeah.
As every good Wisconsinite should on a Friday afternoon. You know, unless you've moved beyond drinking, but then you're a quitter. 844-967-2789. Oh, wow, I'm sorry, man. I shouldn't go there. It's fine for you if you don't want to participate in our state sport here. Me.
Yeah, right. Ain't that the truth?
Any final thoughts for the day, Dom?
So what's next week? What's going on next
week? Next week, I'm going on the road, dude.
When are you going? What days are you going to Iowa?
For the Love of Democracy tour, sponsored by our friend Chad at Chad's Design Build. Man, I'm hitting the road bright and early Wednesday morning, the 10th. I'll be going to Des Moines, Iowa. I'll hit the diner on Main Street, every other of my nooks and crannies there. And then I'll check in at the Marriott, and then I'll probably go over and see if they've given me credentials for the spin room, which I doubt they will. I do know the back area where you can actually catch the candidates between the debate forum and the spin room. So I might.
Oh, it's because you got kicked out that one time, right?
Yeah, that one other time when the DNC hosted. And then I'm going back to the Marriott Hotel Bar in downtown Des Moines. I'm dropping my credit card. I'm sitting third base, and I'm going to get Newt Gingrich hammer drunk that night and see what sort of loose lips there are amongst the GOP contingent. And then I'll be back doing this fine show with you, depending on whether or not Trump lets me in on Thursday.
All right, we'll see.
We'll see. But I'm not going tomorrow. If I don't have credentials, I'm not going to Iowa tomorrow. Sorry, Dom. Sorry, people. Stick around. Maggie Dawn is next. And then outside the Pizza Box with our buddy, Pizza Box Mike.